This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Who We Are, A Long and Magical Journey. And the author is Colleen Costello, and Colleen joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Colleen.
Oh, good morning, Steve. Thank you for having me.
Well, great to have you with us all the way from London, England, right?
That is right. Yes, a long way.
Yes, but we're by the magic of technology, here we are together, and it sounds like you're right in the studio with me. So that's amazing in today's age.
It certainly is.
Yes, I want to read what you've written about your book. You say this: an exciting and magical story interwoven with deep spiritual teachings that will encourage you to think in a new and positive way. The story is about two little bright lights, or little souls, on their journey through space and time, down through the dimensions, galaxies, stars, the perfect golden ages of Lemuria and Atlantis, and sadly, the end times. Journeying with the angelics, the galactics, on Native American lands, through to the new golden age. Also with insight into creating your world and abundance. Well, we certainly are at a very difficult time, aren't we?
Yes, there seems to be many changes going on around us right now. And hopefully, further in the future, there'll be changes for the better.
Well, you have a very positive outlook, as we discussed before we started this recording. Tell us why you wrote this book.
Well, as long as I can remember, I have been very interested and also passionate about body, mind, spirit, whether it be therapies, healing or writing, and also the beautiful beings of light, including the angelics, the archangels. And I've also enjoyed the study of metaphysics for 30 years, and I've read extensively and studied during this time. And with recollections from great teachers, experiences, inspiration and imagination, that is all that inspired my writings. And I've also had some unusual angelic experiences and inspirations.
Now, you say your story is about two little bright lights or little souls. Help us understand more about that.
At the start of the book, it's a very long journey. It's a journey from the heart of our Creator. And it goes on to say that we've travelled through space and time, and we've seen the most magnificent sights and beauty along the way. That we've been everywhere and we've done everything, though we've just forgotten the brilliance of just how beautiful we are. We're divine little bright lights, or you could say little souls. And we've come here from the heart of our Creator, down from the great central sun, down through the dimensions, the galaxies, to live here on Gaia, Great Mother Earth, for a while, so that our soul has a chance to experience spiritual life while at the same time being in the body and to remember who we are and our connections to our Creator.
You talk about the golden ages of Lemuria and Atlantis. Give us some details.
The first golden age was the Polarian golden age. Then there was the Hyperborean golden age. But the golden age of Lemuria and Atlantis, the perfect golden age has been and gone more than once, and it's returning again. And all of the great Mother Earth will once again be beautiful and full of bright, shining light. And then also, the everlasting life in the solar systems has been and gone more than once. We'll be able to understand this all one day. It's like a circle. Everything goes around like the seasons. Everything's forever changing and will go on changing, coming and going, and we'll venture on.
Now, you also talk about the end times. of Lemuria and Atlantis. Is that similar to what we're going through now?
It does seem to be a correlation. There does seem to be something similar going on here. There were different stages in the Golden Ages, but the Golden Ages is what I was writing about, where everything was perfect and harmonious. The children were, everyone had special gifts and powers, and they could read minds and they could levitate, and there was beautiful crystal temples for healing and learning. And all the while there was the guardians and the protectors, the magnificent beings of light and the archangels were with them. But then there were the sad times, the sad end times, when many of her people in both those golden ages, in the end times, they'd lost their innocence. They'd become caught up in greed and control, and their bright lights had become dim. But the kind and loving ones, still in touch with their Creator, knew what would happen. But in the end, they sadly were unable to save their beautiful land, which went below the sea.
You say that Mother Earth is crying out for help.
Yes, there's some of the messages that I have got there throughout the book. Beautiful Mother Earth, Gaia. Mother Earth and every single creature, they're sacred to many people, many indigenous people, including the Native American people. And they believe that if we destroyed or ill-used nature and her beauty, that would be to destroy life itself. Well, we did not understand these words then, but now we understand the wisdom when we look around and see what we've done to our Mother Earth. So we must now do our best to change our ways and to think as the Native American people and many others do, to see our beautiful Gaia as sacred. Some of the ancient ways and the knowledge of Mother Earth has been handed down from the elders to their children and their children's children. And there's so much to be taught and to be remembered about trying to live in harmony with nature and not destroy her. So we hope that the sacred knowledge and the wisdom passed down will not be forgotten, and that people will live in harmony with Gaia and not continue to harm her. And as you said, that I had said earlier, Mother Earth is crying out for help. And so it's also good to send healing as a group, and lots of people around the world are doing this now. To be one with nature and appreciate her beauty, and just to appreciate the nourishment that she gives us.
You also talk about returning to the oneness. Now, what does that mean?
In my understanding, it means that everything is shifting. There's a shift in consciousness. Well, there's going to be a shift in consciousness, or some people call it ascension. A very long cycle in darkness is now coming to a conclusion, and everything is going back home towards the beautiful light. There are and will be wonderful energies coming down from both galactic center and cosmic center, I understand. And we're all starting to return to the oneness from where we came, similar to how it was back in the Golden Ages when all was in perfect harmony. And now this is everything in the whole of creation moving back into being one again, the planets, the galaxies, the stars and all of us. And I understand the future certainly will be in an amazing and exciting time. And this time was chosen, they say, even before the creation of our beautiful galaxy. So life is shifting, and I understand there's big changes to come, and we should let the old go, because as they say, a new tree cannot be born unless an old tree dies. There will be changes in this world. Things have to come to a conclusion. It's like a cycle. Like any cycle. So as one cycle comes to an end, something new is going to be born out of it. And when any cycle comes to an end, there is chaos and confusion. That's what we're seeing in the world. All that confusion out there in the world is coming to a conclusion. And something new is being born right under our noses, something new and beautiful. a new way of being, and we're part of that. And so if we can just keep focused on the beauty of things and acknowledge our Creator.
Will we experience this shift in 2012?
From what I understand is that at the end of 2012 there's going to be beautiful energies, beautiful light coming down from galactic center and cosmic center. And many Indigenous people, such as the Native American, the Maori, the Aboriginal, and others have predicted something would happen at the end of 2012, such as a cleansing or transformation. And the Mayan people, long-time frame calendar, that comes to an end at the end of 2012. And we hear so much now from many spiritual teachings and also channelings. So at the end of, so we're living in a special time, and the date at the end of December corresponds with the alignment of Earth, our solar system, with the galactic center, which is every 12,500 years. That was when the end times of Atlantis. But now, which I understand has never happened before, is going to be in alignment with cosmic center. So that's something new. So there's all these beautiful energies coming through, preparing us. And then I understand for maybe 6 or so years after 2012, there's going to be a cleansing of Mother Earth. And then, say, another 6 years further along, people will be getting prepared for the higher dimension, the fifth dimension, not only for the planet, but for the universe as well. So everything, I understand, will be rising in dimension, in consciousness. A return to consciousness as before the fall of Atlantis, when we remembered then who we were, and of a higher vibration and connected to Father God. So a shift in consciousness, a rapture, I think the Bible mentions a rapture, ascension, and then we'll be able to manifest and memories return from long ago, and for us to acknowledge our Father God. So special times ahead is what I'm getting from, you know, a lot of information that's coming through now. It seems to be coming from everywhere.
We only have about a minute and a half left. Talk to us about living in the moment.
Living in the moment. Yes, appreciating this very moment and seeing the beauty in people and nature, having fun and following our dreams as they did in the golden ages. Think big and reach for the stars. Enjoy your passions and your gifts, which I'm trying to do now. You know, it's not always easy, but to try and be present in this very moment, being at one with nature and appreciating all the beauty and harmony of this moment, rather than living in the past or worrying about tomorrow. So to think in a new and positive way and live more from our hearts rather than our heads, and follow our intuition and appreciate our beautiful Mother Earth Gaia, feeling and seeing her beauty and being grateful for the nourishment that she gives us.
The title of the book, Who We Are, A Long and Magical Journey. And the author is Colleen Costello. Colleen, tell us how to get your book.
You can get it on Google. You can get it on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. Would be probably the easiest way. The publishers are Balboa. You can get it from Balboa Press in America. But certainly Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble, that would you can easily procure it that way.
Well, we thank you for being with us on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to everyone by Balboa Press. Thank you so much, Colleen.
Thank you very much, Steve. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
you're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on Toginet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, LaBellaVitaCosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on Toginet.com. Mark Lipinski is coming to Toginet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski. A live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on Toginet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on Toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Junkie Meets Jesus. And the author is Colin Garnett. And Colin joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Colin.
Hi, Steve. Hi, good afternoon.
Well, great to have you with us all the way from South Africa. It sounds like we're right in the same studio with each other. The magic of technology brings us together.
Wonderful.
Well Colin, before we get into the details of your book, I'm just going to read a little so everyone understands the profound story that this is. Your story, I guess the title sums it up, Junkie Meets Jesus. But you say this, that you grew up in Stockport, South Manchester, in a tough working class culture. And you had a teenage involvement with alcohol, amphetamines, and violence that led to an adult heroin addiction. And for many years, you were lost in crime, drugs, lifestyle. And you even did time in 27 different English prisons and two military prisons. And then in 1993, you turned to God with a very heavy heart and you received Jesus, and your whole life was changed. You were transformed and you've become a highly effective evangelist with a very powerful ministry to those in prison and to their families. So first of all, congratulations for the just a miraculous turnaround in your life.
Thank you. I must be honest, I have difficulty taking any credit for it. It really was an absolute miracle. The terminology, I received Jesus, I was overwhelmed by his love, Steve. I was simply overwhelmed. Yes, I received the truth of who he is, and the truth of that God is who he says he is, and he's not who I want him to be. I kind of, in my point of brokenness, that's what I accepted. And his love just overwhelmed me. It was impossible to resist. To resist was just not an option. It wasn't even a choice.
Well, today you run a recovery home, and we'll get in more about that. But let's go back. Let's go way back to your early beginnings. And for most people, they would say, what happened, Colin? You were raised in a very strong, solid home.
We had a fantastic home life, Steve, you know, comparatively. I mean, we were poor. I didn't realize we were poor until I started to branch out into the world a little bit later on in life. But when I think back now to where we were from and the number of broken families that lived around us, we had a really close, safe home to come home to. There was lots of laughter, lots of fun, never any kind of physical violence. And Dad loved Mum, and Mum loved Dad. And there's no rhyme or reason to why I should not fall off the straight and narrow, jump off the straight and narrow. Wasn't interested.
Yeah, you jumped right off the cliff, and your dad was a great role model to you, wasn't he?
Well, he was a fabulous man. And the longer he's been gone, and the further I get away from my childhood, I look back and I can actually see myself applying the same principles with my two young children now, and they're solid. They're solid. The ethics that he instilled into us, and the degree of morals. None of us were perfect. They didn't expect perfection. They were just all they asked for really was an open mind and an honest heart within the home, and to the best of my ability, that's what I sincerely tried to do that. But for some reason, I was unable to be completely honest about who I was, even in the home, and about how I felt in the home. I felt like a lodger. Despite all the evidence and all the love and all the safe touch and the embrace from Dad every night and the grooming from Mum, I honestly, from somewhere deep within me, I felt like I was in the way.
It's hard to put your finger on it then. It's hard to really understand why you rebelled.
Now, once again, in with the big picture, it was all for a purpose and all for a call. And as I've said many times, I would go through the same again to get to where I am.
Well, you were in a Catholic school, of course, run by nuns, and you had a hard time with that kind of direct control that often these Catholic schools use, right?
Yeah, they scared me. They intimidated me. I wanted so much for them to be something else. I wanted so much for them to be godly and what I thought godly meant. And it wasn't like that. They were cold. They were distant. And one of them, I know it takes two to tango, but around about the age of 7 or 8, one of them physically assaulted me, which was par for the course in those days. It wasn't wrong for school teachers to give the children a clip around the ear when they stepped out of line. And I stepped out of line more than once. But this lady actually stuck the lead of her pencil into my forehead with this really vindictive tone. She was saying, why can't I get through to your thick head? Yeah, I just snapped.
Yeah, and that's where you said enough is enough, and you never came back.
No. No, I can remember, I can crystal clearly remember thinking that I told this lady where to get off. I left her in no doubt as to my feelings, and I stormed out of the classroom. And on my way down the stairs, I sat down on the stairs, and I realized that it felt to me as if I just told one of God's immediate secretaries or one of God's personal assistants where to get off. And in my heart, right in my heart then at that point, I said in a childish, hurt way, I just said to God right then, if she belongs to you, I'd rather go to hell with hypocrites. I'd rather go to hell with friends than to heaven with hypocrites. I said, I don't want it. Keep it. Thanks, but no thanks. And I ran into the arms of the world, basically, at the age of probably about 7 or 8. And from that point started forgery, writing letters from my parents to the school. I wasn't there, and I mastered my parents' signature. Yeah, I was good at being naughty.
Well, how did your parents deal with this? Were you on the run then, from then on?
No, I wasn't. I spent about 7 or 8 weeks on the run. Not on the streets. I was going home at night, and then I was getting up for school in the morning, and then just ducking off into the fields to play football and going stealing fruit from the apple trees in various farms and just getting up to general mischief. Mum and Dad really didn't have a clue. They didn't have any idea. So when it did come to the light, it was the last thing they were expecting. I think it took them so by surprise they didn't know how to deal with it. It was the disappointment. They were terribly, terribly disappointed. And, you know, I wasn't very honest with my emotions at that time anyway. I wasn't able to express my emotions at that time anyway. And when I saw the disappointment in my parents, it put me in touch with my emotions. And I couldn't deal with them, Steve. I didn't know what to do with them. They felt wrong. My feelings felt wrong, so I just cut off from them. I didn't know how to express them. I didn't know how to voice them. Nobody ever taught me to voice them. Nobody ever said it's okay to be not okay. Nobody ever said, you know, you can be hurt and you can be shy and you can be sensitive. We just didn't talk like that where I came from. It was
right.
A tough, tough neighborhood.
So you took to self-medication, I guess, trying to deal with all this pain.
I did, yeah, I did. And I found it very comforting to begin with. To begin with, it was just with cigarettes and cider. We used to get a bottle of cider between about six or seven of us, and we'd all have five or six mouthfuls of from the cider, and everybody felt better. And we were all doing the same thing. There must have been two-thirds of where I came from, two-thirds of the district that I grew up on, self-medicated. Now, looking back, everybody drank at the weekend. They didn't just drink at the weekend, they got drunk at the weekend. That was just the way it was. I didn't know there was another way. And so we kind of picked up on that when we were young, and we set out how we thought we had to carry on.
Then you were kind of on the fast track to some very serious hard drugs like heroin.
Yeah, there was there was a twisted attraction within me towards it, Steve. I remember a headline on the news. On the Manchester Evening News, and this newsreader was talking about a heroin overdose that took place in a drug orgy within the middle of Manchester. And I really liked the sound of it. This guy died from a heroin overdose. And everybody was disgusted and everybody was breathtaking and disappointed. And I was intrigued by it. I thought, I like the sound of that. I liked the way people reacted. It was as if, now I know I can get all the attention I want. I know how to get attention.
And so you got attention so much, you were in 27 different English prisons and two military prisons, I guess, for all kinds of different crimes.
Yeah, mainly fraudulent crimes. It was just about getting the daily batch of heroin.
So you had to steal and do anything you could to get the money to buy the heroin?
Anything. I was fortunate in that it was only confined to stealing. And, you know, there was that nice, I knew I was going against everything my family stood for. Even in the depths and the darkness of my heroin addiction, I knew this is not how I'm supposed to be. I knew it was wrong, but I couldn't stop. Everything within me wanted to stop. And every promise I made to my family, I believed that I was the person in my promises. But I couldn't, it just would not go away. And the longer I tried to not use, the more the urge was to use. And each time I failed, I felt worse. And the worse I felt, the more I used. And the more I used, the more I had to steal. And it becomes a self-sustaining ecosystem. The worse it gets, the worse it gets. And in the beginning, I was scared that the heroin addiction was going to kill me. And then towards the end, I was scared that it wasn't going to kill me.
And then on the 17th of June, 1993, in a prison chapel, you had a miraculous experience.
It was unbelievable. And I choose my words, it really was. And oftentimes, even now, even today, it still is unbelievable. Particularly in an age of cynicism, I was converted, Steve. I wasn't supposed to be going to that chapel that evening. It just so happened that I went to the chapel, and as I walked into the service, there were maybe between 15 and 20 gangsters in there, some hard-looking criminals there. And I just sat in the corner, and I walked over to the corner in my special way and acknowledged them with my special gangster signs. But these guys weren't responding. They were just sat quietly chatting. And then one of them stood up and started to sing. And he just started to sing Majesty. And I felt like crying. As soon as I heard him sing, I saw for the first time that this guy wasn't singing about God. He was singing to God. And I really got the sense that I was getting left behind here. I don't fit in here. And then the rest of the convicts joined in, and it was rapturous. It was the closest. Even now, even today, I can, when I think back to what happened in that prison chapel that night, I can miss it. I miss, from my point of conversion, from the 18th of June onwards, I was converted on the 17th of June. But from the 18th of June onwards, my prison cell was my sanctuary. It was a wonderful place to be. It was just me, and it was just the Lord, and it was the Word of God. And it was. I miss it now. I don't get that that holy isolation anymore. The phone never stops ringing now.
Well, you've become a very highly effective evangelist, a powerful ministry to those in prisons and to their families, those trapped in addictions, and to the hearts and minds of developing youth. Tell us about the Bethesda Recovering Homes of South Africa, what you have built.
Yeah, my wife and I married a South African lady, and she is actually an attorney by trade. She graduated law school many, many years ago, and we met 10 years ago. And as we met 12 years ago, got married 10 years ago, and it was just heavy on my heart that the South African drug scene was seriously lacking adequate therapy. I was listening to headlines, I was listening to the news clips and reading in the newspapers what was going on in the rehabs. And it all made sense, because these guys are fresh out of apartheid, and they didn't have drug and alcohol problems up until 1993 in South Africa. And I set my standards by the European clinics. So the burden on my heart never went away. So I just said to my wife, you know, I thought I'd give this a try. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. So we sold our house in Cape Town, plowed everything we had into a lodge in a village just near Port Elizabeth, and set up the internet, set up the beds, got the plates out, got the tables out, got everything in place, and then started marketing. And within 6 months, we'd taken in about three or four people. And then it seemed like all of a sudden we started to get quite a steady influx. Now we've got people in from Nigeria, Holland, Germany, England. We've had several in from America, a couple from Australia. It's www.bethesda4recovery.com. And I think the picture of Deanna having the law degree and myself having the degree in theology, that's the difference we make. We've got the balance of the legal side of things, to walk with integrity and professional integrity, and then we can also bring in the spiritual dynamic. And on top of that, there's my addiction experience as well. And I've honestly seen thousands and thousands of lights come on in thousands and thousands of eyes. And I know once that light comes on, it never goes out.
Well, that's so exciting, Colin. Again, we congratulate you and we honor you for what you've done. I know you honor Jesus and your God, but you're still the one who decided after you had this experience to move forward. Yeah. So the title of the book, everyone, is Junkie Meets Jesus, and the author is Colin Garnett. Colin, tell us how to get your book.
It's available at the moment on Amazon.com through Balboa Press.
And also, I'm sure we can learn at Bethesda4recovery.com.
Yeah, that's our little facility. It would be nice to maybe form some kind of connection with other rehabs in America. Maybe we can pass on a little bit of what we've got. Maybe we can glean a little bit of what they've got. We have to share what we've got, Steve. We can't keep this secret. We can only keep it if we give it away.
Well, good for you and good for everyone. And there is hope, everyone, even in these dark hours. There's always hope because of God, right?
Yeah, amen. Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Colin. Thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing, this special interview brought to everyone by Balboa Press. Thank you, Colin.
Thanks, Steve. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Want to be challenged in a powerful way to leap beyond what you think is possible? Then join us Mondays for the Leah Jansen Show. Every Monday at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com with Leah Jansen. Listen live as life coach Leah uses her coaching skills to give you the tools you need to take action and create momentum. You are encouraged to call in and share your greatest fears, challenges, and obstacles. And then listen as Leah obliterates those barriers to success. For more on Leah and the show, check out her website, LeahJansen.com. That's Leah, LeahJansen.com. Spend 1 hour with Leah, and you'll be captivated by her energy, enthusiasm, and magnetism. You'll quickly become addicted to her positive attitude and make-it-happen mentality. Ready for a life-changing, mood-altering show? Then get ready for Leah Jansen and listen live to The Leah Jansen Show every Monday morning at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole O'Dell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The Enlightenment Journal, and the author is Nora Walksonspirit. And Nora joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Nora.
Hi.
Great to have you with us. This is going to be quite a journey for everyone listening and everyone who reads your book and tries to understand where you're coming from. First of all, Nora, let me read a couple of things that you have written about your book so everyone understands what we're going to be focusing on. You say this: the wisdom and knowledge, the frequencies of love and light shall expand the higher self of all who integrate the word spoken within the pages of this enlightenment journal. The teachings and techniques channeled through infinite masters shall awaken your inner oneness of consciousness and so allow your infinite journey to begin. Well, that right. In and of itself, we could spend the whole time talking about just that one paragraph.
Yeah, it's pretty deep.
Yes. And that's why... Let's see. When you say deep, it's a way of living and being for you, isn't it?
That's right. It's a state of consciousness.
It's a journey that harkens back to your ancestry being an Algonquin.
Part of it would be going back to the understanding of how a shaman is.
Explain what a shaman is.
The shaman is those are the, I guess it'd be native elders from many, many ancestries, and they speak with the spiritual realms. And so they move out of their body and their mind, and they start speaking into the higher realms. So that's part of what I was born with as a shaman.
When did you discover that you had this gift?
The gift actually started coming in little bits of waveforms when I was probably in my teenage years, and then a very heightened experiences that I had when I was just standing and going into stillness states, of like a meditative state, in different sacred sites in the world, such as Stonehenge or Machu Picchu in Peru. that's when the gifts really started to become awakened.
So as you visited these
sacred sites,
you all of a sudden felt things like you've never felt before.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, that certainly would change a person to have spiritual experiences, right?
That's exactly what it was. It was an spiritual enlightenment.
Okay, and that's why, of course, you call your book The Enlightenment Journal. You say it's written to elevate the reader's frequencies through understanding of your consciousness and all energy fields of the body and mind. Now, help us understand what you mean by elevating the reader's frequencies.
Okay, so when we're standing, I guess I could give you a very simple example. If you were going to go into stepping into the lake, say you were at your cottage or such, and if you walked into the lake, you might just be walking along. The water feels a bit cool, but then all of a sudden you come into a warm spot. You know, there's a warm spot. That's the difference. There's an energy field that your body is feeling. You know all of a sudden the water's not cold because it's an energy that's surrounding your feet. So when we're standing in sacred portals, there's a very high energy field on that grass or on that lawn or in that crop circle or stone formation that you feel just like you would as if you were stepping into the water. So when you're reading these books that I'm writing, you are going to feel that same sensation within your body of a pulling, of shifting you. You know, it's not like you're going to get dizzy in the head, but you're going to sense, oh, there's an energy field that's around me all of a sudden. And that's from the vibration of the word that you're reading. It's hard to imagine that a book would have a word emanating from it, but it's just the way that it's written. And Yogananda and Buddha had the same, and Confucius had the same ability. When they spoke, there was an energy field that came from their word. There's a vibration that you had the guna. There's a tone. And it creates a frequency of energy around the body. So you're shifting because you're feeling in your mind right now. You're feeling on your outer body right now. There's an energy field that's very warm and peaceful.
Now, these energy fields, these spiritual awakenings, as you call them, are spoken in sacred languages through you, and you just shared some of that with us.
Right, and I had this language come over me quite accidentally and then suddenly, and when it came over me, I had it for, I think, about 2 weeks back in 1987 or 88, and then I just asked for the gift of interpretation, so that the seven spiritual gifts. Some people have the gift of the sacred fire of tongues, and some have only the gift of interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so that's why I can speak the language and then quickly interpret it.
Many who are Christians, of course, know of the gift of tongues.
Right, and the gift of prophecy.
Right, and the gift of interpretation as well. Okay. How often do you receive these kinds of messages?
Hourly. That's why my native name is Walks in Spirit. I'm always walking in spirit. The messages may pour through, it just depends. If I'm open to receive, if I'm busy in my operative state, you know, of working or cooking or cleaning, it's different. But if I'm sitting still, a master being may just enter and start speaking to me.
Now, have you ever felt afraid, or have you ever seen one being? Have you ever been afraid of when you felt this, or have you ever seen one of these beings?
I've seen I've seen two or three beings when I was in Machu Picchu and Lake Titicaca. I felt the beings in Stonehenge and Avebury Circle. And I've seen shadows in my house. And that sometimes would startle me more than... fear doesn't come in because it's always very peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
It's always very peaceful and warm. But I have been startled because, you know, out of the corner of my eye, I see something move, go, you know, walk by. But it's very quickly that I just start speaking in the languages and I communicate with the energy field that's there.
Now, this energy field that may be in the form of a person, has that been a familiar face? Could it be Jesus or...
It's not a form of a person, okay? It's just an energy field. So it would be like you would think of like a shaft of light,
mm-hmm.
like the sun coming through, or it'll be a color. It might just be, you know, a pink circle or orb. It might just be like a wavy energy strand. I've only seen a being come in when I've like had my eye, when I'm in the higher meditative state. Okay, that's my inner mind, but not physical. You don't see a physical formation. Jesus comes in for me. It's all golden, like warm golden sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a golden energy field. And I'll see with my inner eye, I'll see, you have it right now behind you, behind your right shoulder.
Hmm. Okay.
So there's like, I'm seeing, even though I don't even know who you look like, mm-hmm. or see, I've never met you before, I can see with my higher consciousness mind, I can see where you are. There's a yellow... energy field behind your right shoulder, just above and to the right, about 3 feet.
So the spiritual world is very close to us.
Very, very,
all the time.
It's just introducing itself more and more subtly. But for many shamans and sages and seers, many of the light workers now are starting to communicate because they're understanding that they're coming in closer to be with us in a more intimate, loving way.
So do you feel direction from these messages, like what you should do, what you should...
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I sit and speak in the languages for everything, all my decision-making. I call in Jesus, I call in a master being, or just an infinite all source, which is like a creator. Just ask for assistance or ask for guidance.
The question is asked of you, how many books, CDs will they express through you for everyone on the planet?
Right now we are going to be delivering 9 books and teachings to this child. There will be 5 techniques and CDs. And there will be 7 journals or scripts. These journals will be tablets, such as Moses tablets, Christ consciousness tablets. And they will be coming within the year 2012. That we will deliver them to her and will be published to the world within the next few years.
Now, all of this is to raise a person's consciousness field, and when you do that, you say you are gifted.
Yeah. So what it is these teachings or these books that are pouring through right now are really to allow the person whoever they are. They may not even be, you know, a spiritual person. They may be someone who's just learning and just topples upon one of these books in the spiritual section of a library or such, or is gifted a book like this. It's really just to make them become more aware of the energy field around them, and that awareness of, like, stepping into that warm pocket of water in the lake will allow them to become aware that it's actually an intelligent consciousness field of a being that's come to speak to them. So it's really about raising the awareness of the consciousness energies around your body or around your animal, pets, or plants, and just it's enlightening you that you're not alone. We are your human form here on this planet, but we're not alone. And through this communication of these languages, are they revealing that they are here? Yep.
And so being not alone and just trying to see what you are seeing, you see all these energy fields which are could be persons related to that person?
Okay, you're talking about spirits now, right?
Right.
Okay. So what's the question then?
Well, I'm trying to understand the difference between an energy field and a spiritual being.
Okay. Based on the communication aspect.
Right, right.
Okay. So here's the thing, Steve. When you are sitting in quietness, and your people go for church to be in quietness just to let go of their weeks, you know, works and energies really that's weighing them down. So they're sitting in quietness, and way back, they would wait on a word of knowledge. Some creator consciousness of Mother, Father, God, a Buddha, a Hindi priest, you know, a Tibetan monk, whatever culture, whatever a nation that they were, or civilization at that time that they were, they honored some sort of a powerful source that would bring them into peace. So they weren't looking to see. I mean, some of them, you know, created Buddhas or created monuments of these things, but they were really not listening to a person coming and walking to them in their eyes or before their physical being, whether they were sitting in a church pew or under a tree. They were waiting on a word of knowledge to come into their consciousness. That's what they did hundreds of thousands of years ago. And those were the sages and the ancient priests that knew there was a hidden field of consciousness or light that could enter into your mind and help bring you inner peace. So that is not something that I see. I just know. And when you elevate your consciousness, it just becomes all-knowing. You just know that you know that there is a creator here, or there's a consciousness of whoever you wish to be there is there with you. It's usually peace. A spirit of a person that has passed over, it can come in different formats depending on, you know, how aware again you are of feeling the energies of the spirit. Like, I have people that have me come to their house to channel their great-grandfather who passed over. Does he have a word of knowledge for me? And yes, I can communicate with that spirit.
Mm-hmm.
But not everyone has that ability. Right?
Right.
It's just part of the shamanic gift that I was born with.
Well, we're all seeking peace. And of course, if everyone was seeking what you're advocating, there would be peace in the world.
Yeah. Absolutely, and love.
Right, because the two go together.
Yeah. It's just surrendering. It's really about sitting down and surrendering your mind, which is the ego, to go into absolute stillness and just wait on that consciousness of peace to enter. That's the true godliness. That's the true oneness where you can sit under a tree and just, you know, look at the blades of grass, look at the insects, listen to the bird. You're not in your mind of the chatter, which is the ego trying to assemble all sorts of commands and directions. It's going into stillness and listening for that very quiet inner voice to speak to you. That's the peace. That's the oneness consciousness that you create with the Mother, Father, God, or whoever you are spiritually enlightened by.
The title of the book, Enlightenment Journal, and we've been listening to Nora Walks in Spirit, the author. Nora, tell us how to get your book.
Amazon.com. And it is also on the Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble are the two internet sites. And then also my website is norawalksinspirit.com, and there's a products tab on there.
Thank you, Nora, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you for having me.
This interview brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.